Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm True Quinn. In my hands, I'm holding an anthology of comics, letters, poetry, and artwork made by queer people in prison across the United States. It was curated and published by ABO Comics, a collective artist and activist. The anthology is about COVID in prison. William DeClose writes from Massachusetts and describes dinner during lockdown. One slice of lunch meat, one slice of cheese, two slices of bread, one cup of lettuce, two brownie cupcakes. Laura Luttrell submitted a comic, which seems to be addressed to people on the outside. Imagine this. Take like three parking spaces together. Now add eight people sharing one toilet, one shower, two sinks. Add disabilities, various degrees of coping skills, violence, and available support systems. Oh, and you can't leave. Now throw some COVID-19 on that. Multiply by eight, then by four to the power of three. This is the impending health crisis known at CCWF. That's the Central California Women's Facility. They continue. You can attempt to ignore us. Pretend this doesn't involve you. But we're learning now, like never before, how connected we all are. Founded by friends, operated by volunteers, and led by Casper Sender, ABO collects artwork and stories about queer life in prison. Since its inception, ABO has raised over $34,000 in mutual aid for queer prisoners. Prisoners like Eric Lee Tadana.
Hello, my legal name is Eric Lee Tadana. I am gender fluid, pansexual, polyamorous, and I define myself as a beautiful contradiction. I've been active in art advocacy since 2017 through Black and Pink, Discipline Press, Worth Rises, FTA Collective, and of course, ABO Comics.
ABO is working on collecting sound and video to continue amplifying queer voices beyond publishing anthologies. Here's a phone call between director of ABO Comics, Casper, and Eric.
Please press 1. If this is not correct, please press. Your payment has been approved.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
All right. Any updates?
Yes, okay, so I downloaded a new app for recording, and it's actually working right now.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So I just wanted to let you know that it is recording, yeah, if that's okay. Otherwise, I'll shut it off.
No, it's all good.
Okay.
You want to go ahead and try and do some stuff?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
So let's go into a little bit about your creative process. What sort of materials do you have? What sort of art do you like to create? What inspires you?
Basically, I channel energy into my artwork, and it's very therapeutic for me. My favorite kind of art to produce is collages. I always start out with visioning or imagining first. So it's just me seeing it in my head, and then I come up with a script. And then I do a sketch, and then I'll do an outline, and then I come back with the shading and touch-up. So it's a step-by-step process, but because of my mental illness, I do multiple projects that are at different stages. So whatever kind of stage I'm feeling like, one day I may feel like doing outlines, or one day I may feel like doing shading, I can go to those whichever projects at that stage.
Is there any more you might want to share about a specific piece that you're working on currently or about a piece that you might like to narrate?
The next project I look forward to is Psychosis Number 1. There's a song at the end of that I could sing that's going to be published. The lyrics are going to be published with that zine whenever we get it all produced.
Awesome. Yeah, if you want to do that, let's go for it.
Okay. I'm going from memory, so y'all bear with me. There's angels all around me. A silence fills this place. The demons inside of me are waiting to say grace, devouring my hopes and dreams, leaving only pain. That's when I hit my knees and call on your name. Decisions and choices we all must make. Battles and trials we all must face. But you're the author and perfecter of my faith, of my faith, and everything I am.
Do you want to talk at all about what that piece means to you?
In the anthology number three, it kind of goes into that, what we call the habanero lipstick story. Mm-hmm. That's actually an excerpt from the psychosis number one scene. So basically, I went through psychosis where I blacked out, and it was part of it was just stress from sleep deprivation, and the other part was what they call a religious psychosis. So that was just me in a single cell, just it's worse than a single cell, psychiatric seclusion cell, and it's just dealing with inner demons and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember that. That's one of my favorite stories of yours. It's a funny story that's not so funny. But would you want to tell people about that habanero lipstick story a little bit? I feel like that's a really good one.
Basically, it's about turning a negative into a positive. As part of the treatment at the prison psychiatric hospital, I got sprayed with pepper spray in the face. And that led me to think about just different alternative therapies, and the habanero lipstick is one of the alternative therapies. You have to check it out. It's in the ABO Queer Prisoner Anthology number 3.
I don't know if maybe you just want to share a story, or if there's anything that comes to mind that you might want to talk about.
I'm up for adoption. I'm not sure how the chosen family works. I've been reading about it in the Out magazine and Advocacy magazine. And what I mean by that is I'm not sure if it's kind of like you have to put out a almost like a friend request or a family request, with the words confirmed, or, because I consider you part of my chosen family. And I just put that up, and then I'm up for adoption. I'm very interested in fashion, music, of course, advocacy. Just want to make the world a better place with the rest of the time I have here.
Well, you're adopted into the ABO family, so.
All right.
Okay. Do you have any questions for our audience, or anything you'd like to share for a call to action?
The questions I have is just, what kind of change would you like to see in the world, and just encourage us all to be that change? Because I know for me, I didn't get a lot of help, so I was telling someone here, I said, what I want to do is be the help that I didn't get for someone else, instead of just being bitter about not getting the help.
You have 1 minute left.
All right.
All right, that's the end.
The caller has hung up.
And Casper Sender is here to tell Out in the Bay listeners more about the ABO family.
My name is Casper. My pronouns are he or they. Been in Oakland for about 6 or 7 years now, and ABO Comics was started nearly 4 years ago. We're an abolitionist publishing collective dedicated to amplifying the voices of incarcerated queer people.
So this project came together because you were writing letters to people in prison. What pushed you to do that to begin with?
I started writing with people in prison probably when I was in high school. I just had sort of an interest in pen palling at that time. I was really shy and introverted as a teenager, so I like to get to know people through that platform. And I reached out to a couple people in prison around that time just because I thought it would be something that it was something I didn't know all that much about. I've had family members who have been incarcerated, but I didn't know that much about what life was like for people in prison, especially queer people. So when I was in high school, I just, I started forming a couple friendships with people on the inside. And my interest just kind of grew from there, learning about all of what they have to go through on a daily basis.
What have you learned about queer life in prison?
A lot. for a lot of people, you know, it's different depending on which facility they're incarcerated in, which state. Every rules are, you know, rules are different across the states, depending on which prison people are in. And for many people who are incarcerated, they don't have access to a lot of the basic necessities that I think us on the outside take for granted many times. You know, for many trans women or and trans men in prison, they don't have access to any sort of items in commissary that would help affirm their gender identity. A lot of people are forced to adhere to grooming guidelines, like having close cropped hair, or, you know, people on hormones are not able to access, say, like bras or the proper undergarments that they might need. They're also heavily subjected to harassment from both staff and other prisoners. You know, people who have been on hormones for, say, 20 years who are incarcerated in a prison that is not lined with their gender identity still have to shower with people of different gender identities. They're housed with people of different gender identities. So sexual assault is extremely high for the queer community in prison. There's been a big learning curve for me in the last 10 years. I feel like I'm still learning new things about the prison system every day, even though I've been corresponding with people, you know, pretty much every day of my life for the last 10 years or so. It's always kind of a shock to learn new things about what's going on behind prison walls.
What would you say is the latest, most shocking thing that you've learned?
Probably how prisons have gone about protocol with COVID-19. One person gets sick in a prison, and then there's really no way to isolate that person, so it just spreads like wildfire. So if one person gets sick in prison, pretty much everybody gets sick. So there have been mass deaths inside prison this year of both guards and prisoners. You know, one of the things that I've seen is many guards, you know, they leave the prison at the end of the day, they go home to their families, they go out into the world, they contract COVID-19, and then they come into contact with hundreds of prisoners the next day at work. It just was overwhelming for so many prisons. There were huge staff shortages, so people were not even getting fed a lot of the time. They were not receiving medication. We've been receiving letters that are dated 3 months old at this point that are just now getting in. We've also received letters from people saying, like, hey, I haven't heard from you in months, when we've written them multiple times in the last few months. So there's a lot of chaos and confusion inside right now.
I'm curious about the stories and images that you receive. I'm sure they're not all about being in prison. I'm sure there are other things too that come up. What are some of the stories that people are sharing with us?
You know, it's people's everyday life for folks who are incarcerated. So it's not something that is at the forefront of their mind at every single instant of the day. So many of the stories we get are just about human nature and relationships. Like one of our folks, Harold Lee, he does this series called Pod Life, where it's just really funny, silly, one-off comic strips similar to like Archie, about just funny things that happen in prison, like him playing really silly, harmless, practical jokes on people just to bring a little bit of laughter and light to their day, or just kind of, you know, poking fun with guards and stuff, you know. And he's continued this series over the course of a couple of years. We're hoping to publish his own graphic novel pretty soon. And it's really heartwarming to see people's resilience and their spirit and able to create laughter and joy and love in pretty much any circumstance.
You're working with people and they're sending you art and poetry and short stories. There's actually like a feedback process that happens. So it's also like a honing of skills too. Can you walk us through how that process works? Or is it all through letter writing?
Sure. Most of it's through letter writing. Some of it's through phone calls. I finally caved And this year I got us a work phone for AVO Comics because that was something that was so heavily requested from our contributors. But we're a very, very small team of volunteers here. And we work with about 250 incarcerated people at this point. So it's been really hard to manage our letter load. It's been really hard to manage phone calls that are constantly incoming. But we do our best to try and provide feedback and guidance for as many of the folks working on art as humanly possible. It is mostly through letter writing. People will send us, drafts of their comics or their artwork. We'll try our best to send back feedback and, guidance. And we really want to encourage people who have maybe never tried their hand at creating comics or maybe even never tried to draw before, just pick up a pen and channel all of their emotions into it. And it's really exciting to see so many first-time people submit to us.
And I'm sure you've seen people develop over time. That must be really exciting to see.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm thinking of one person in particular who's actually going to be out of prison this year, and we're really excited to have him come visit us. His name is Sir Brian, and he had really never created comics at all or delved into artwork very much the first year. And now we're in year four, and we've just seen his art progress so incredibly to the point where it's like, wow, is this even art from the same person? It's just incredible to flip back through the anthologies through the years, because many of our contributors have been featured in all four now, or maybe even other publications as well. So to see their storylines progress over the years and see their art progress has been really incredible.
So you said your friend Sir Brian will be released soon.
Mm-hmm.
And what resources are available to Sir Brian when they come out? Will they have a home? Will they have access to, healthcare, food, shelter, all those basic needs?
Yeah, that's always a major concern when our folks are getting out, because many have been separated from their families and friends for so long and may not even have that support when they're coming out. So something we try to do every time our contributors are being released is save up a couple $100 for them for their release funds. We try to help out with people purchasing maybe a cell phone. We try to help out with a couple months' rent if it's possible. So all of our fundraising efforts are either going directly to people's commissary accounts so that they can afford food and, legal counsel or medical care. But then also trying our best to help with reentry support. For Sir Brian, he doesn't have a whole lot of outside support. So we're trying to build up a team right now to make sure he gets everything he needs and he's able to get on his feet. I believe he'll be going to a halfway house when he's released for psychological care as well as medical care. We're a little nervous every time it happens because prisons don't release people with the necessary items, financial support, or even a game plan in a lot of cases. So it's really like people are released into the world with almost nothing. And then, they have very limited options, which is why we've seen this kind of revolving door at the prison system.
Why is it that LGBTQ people are disproportionately incarcerated?
I really wish there was like a simple, easy answer, because that would mean that the fix would be simple and easy. But unfortunately, it's not. It's extremely complex. LGBTQ people disproportionately are isolated from family and friends, especially during incarceration. And, we just don't have the community support. I think a lot of it is we need to be better to each other, and we need to uplift each other and hold space for each other. And something that has been hard for me, especially the last couple years, is seeing so much internal fighting and division amongst our queer communities. We already kind of face that in so many ways from the larger community, and to see that sort of like internal division and us constantly kind of fighting within our own groups has been really hard. I'm hoping that we can start to come together and heal each other as a community.
What would you want to say to queer people who may not have known anyone who's been incarcerated?
I think just realizing that we have differences in upbringings, we have differences in experiences. We just need to be able to realize that like we're all coming from a place of compassion for our neighbors and wanting to build a better, stronger world together. And it's okay if we disagree on how to do that. We just need to keep talking to each other.
What about that judgment factor that some people have? Some of them may not even believe in abolition. So how could we talk to each other and open up that dialogue?
Yeah, that's hard to work through, especially because many of us have been through trauma in our own lives and we've been harmed by people, and we should be able to hold each other accountable, but to be able to do that in a compassionate way and realize that we're all going to make mistakes in our lives, and sometimes we're going to make heinous mistakes and horrible ones that are going to really hurt other people, but that doesn't take away our humanity. That doesn't mean we're a monster not deserving of any sort of compassion or human affection in any sort of way. And we focus so much on a punitive system where it's just making sure that the person who has harmed another person suffers, and that's not working, and it's created more harm in the world and more broken people who don't have an outlet or coping mechanism, and it's just creating a cycle of suffering in all of us. So we can realize that there can be two true things at once. Somebody can harm another person and still have been harmed, and that we need to be able to reconcile those ways and find better solutions than what we currently have.
And of course, some people are wrongfully incarcerated as well.
Yeah. There are quite a few people right with who take ownership for the crime that they've been committed for and want to make amends and want to work towards becoming better, stronger, happier people, especially for all the people in their lives. And then, of course, there are some people who have been wrongfully convicted of things or accused of things that they didn't do or that were misrepresented. A lot of people don't get what we hope for to be a fair trial in this country. People are just kind of pushed through the system, or they're pushed into taking plea deals for something because they're scared. Despite whether or not somebody has actually done a horrible thing to another person, I don't think there's really any other reason to continue a cycle of abuse towards that person.
I read that you're funded, so you've received funding from California Arts Council, Horizons Foundation, the Resist Foundation, as well as the Tegan and Sarah Foundation. I didn't even know there was a Tegan and Sarah Foundation. Is it by them? What is up with that?
It's actually by them. They have a really amazing team put together. It was hilarious because I was a big Tegan and Sarah mm-hmm. fan when I was in high school and maybe college back in my days when I still kind of identified as a lesbian and was really questioning my identity. And to find out that they developed an entire foundation to try and assist LGBTQ organizations was just incredible. They've been doing live segments with a lot of their grant fundees. And just seeing them, just seeing queer people do stuff that gives back to their community so heavily is so wonderful.
It's so important that idea of mutual aid, especially in communities like ours. So many of us get kicked out of our homes and go through so much isolation, and we kind of make our own families, right?
Absolutely.
It sounds like you've made your own with people all over the United States.
Yeah, it's been, it was not something that I anticipated when we started. Every day, we get more and more letters from people, and our family grows a little bit more. We've linked up tons of new pen pals, linked up people who are incarcerated and are getting out with people who are still on the inside.
And in the wider context of everything that's happening right now with the movement for Black Lives, how are you feeling? You've been doing this work for years now, and now everything's kind of like coming to a culmination. Like, what is the connection here between your work and the uprising for Black Lives against police brutality?
Sure. A lot of it is extremely connected. Police brutality heavily ties into our system of the prison industrial complex and policing at large. We've seen some of the most horrific instances happen to our contributors on the inside from the people who are supposed to protect them and keep them safe. The talk about prison abolition kind of being in the mainstream right now, and there being just a larger push, there being mass protests around this issue. It has been an interesting year, to put it lightly. It's made me hopeful that things will start to change for the better. It's really nice to see so many people really get out there and either protest or talk to their friends and loved ones about these issues, just kind of bring them to the forefront so we can start really making change for the better in this world.
How do you think that we can continue to talk about abolition as not a radical idea, but something that would actually just be for the ultimate betterment of our health?
Yeah. For so long, I think abolition has been kind of this abstract concept where it sounds very flowery and very like, we just want to create a lovely world where everybody gets along and there's no issues and nobody ever hurts anybody else. I think that's kind of been what the perception of abolition has been for a really long time. And now that we're coming up with alternatives to policing in prisons, and sorry about that, I'm next door to a kitchen. So, but the idea that we're coming up with alternatives now to policing and prisons and just having more options on the table is a great direction. I hope we'll continue what we've been doing for so long is not working for our communities and for our families. And so we just have to try something new and be open to being wrong sometimes.
Is there anything else that you want to say about the work you've been doing?
Sure. I think, you know, this year, us living through this giant matrix simulation, it's left a lot of people kind of floundering and not really knowing what the best direction to go is. I think there's been a spike in mental health issues and depression and anxiety. And so I'd really say we need to start channeling all of that fear and anxiety and sadness and uncertainty into productivity. And in whatever sense that means to you and whatever it brings happiness to you, I don't mean in like a corporate sense of productivity. I mean in a start doing things that bring you happiness and bring joy into your life, because you'll be able to lead by example. If you're able to figure out the role that you want to play in this world and the change that you want to bring, then you will be able to do it.
So tell me, how have you done it? How have you persevered through working multiple jobs, doing this kind of work on the side, and then coming to having your own office space? It doesn't sound easy, and it doesn't sound easy to support yourself financially, especially in the Bay Area. So for people who may want to do this kind of advocacy work for the multitude of issues that we're facing right now, what kind of advice would you give?
Just start doing it and taking it day by day. And it's hard. It's really hard work. But, you know, we're on the right track, I think.
Find out more about ABO at abocomics.com. They're looking for volunteers, pen pals, and donations. You can be a part of their efforts to help people on the inside by food, gender-affirming items, and more. Thank you for listening, and if you'd like to get involved or share a story, email us at outinthebaysf@gmail.com or go to our website, outinthebay.org, for more queer radio from San Francisco. I'm True Quinn. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
We're at outinthebay.org.